Report. Thank you for tuning in. As is the case, let's start the show in the correct fashion. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Today is Thursday, January 17th, 2013. Now, for some of you, I'm not sure if you realize or if you were there at the beginning of the 8 o'clock hour, but Blog Talk Radio is experiencing some difficulties. So we have started the show an hour late. We will run the full 2 hours. However, what we are going to do is we are going to start with our guest this evening right off the bat. Our guest is Susan Tully Affair. And what Susan and I are going to discuss tonight is the financial impact of illegal immigration, what the media and mainstream media and others refuse to report. Susan and I will. And with that, seeing we're going to jump right into it, I would like to invite Susan Tully from FAIR onto the program. Are you there, Susan?
I am, Ruthie. Good to be with you.
Hi. Thank you so very much. I apologize so much for the confusion and problems tonight, and I thank you so very much for bearing with us and being able to do the program at 9.
Happy to do it. Happy to give this message out to the people.
Thank you. Now, before we get started on our main topic of the financial impact of illegal immigration, would you like to share just a little bit with the listeners about FAIR itself and a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I actually started with FAIR as an activist in the late 80s. I come from the state of California originally. I was in law enforcement out there. I came to this issue because of the impacts on the city and in my official capacity and what I did. And I got to know FAIR right away. I met Dan Stein probably in 1991, the first time, and we were both really pretty young at the time. So it was a long time ago. But I worked on this issue as an activist all the way up until the time I went to work for FAIR in 2002. So this was a huge issue. I saw it firsthand what it does to cities, counties, and states. Now the state of California, I'm sure, leads the rest of the nation in costs for illegal immigration, jobs taken by illegal immigrants, and probably the largest population of illegal immigrants in the country. However, nobody really knows what that number is. So anyway, FAIR's been around for more than 30 years. They're the biggest, oldest immigration watchdog organization in the country. We depend heavily on membership and activist support. We would love to invite tonight everybody who's listening to the show to go to our website at fairus.org, F-A-I-R-U-S.org. Sign up for our alerts, because we know there's a pending amnesty that the Obama administration and many others are jumping on board to try to get moving. And we're going to need all the help we can get in people making phone calls and pushback on that kind of proposal. So I really invite everybody who's listening to go sign up for our alerts so we can keep you in the loop about what's going on.
You know, the old adage, united we stand, is so important at this time. I mean, we do have a big battle on our hands. And, you know, you've been fighting this issue, illegal immigration, longer than I have, but it just seems like, and I don't know, you could tell me if it's more cyclical, you know, kind of in cycles, or, but people are just wearing down, and I really honestly believe that's what the government, their whole intent is here, is to just keep pounding away at it. And, you know, we have to renew our determination. We have to get back to the program. We have to unite. We have to join organizations such as FAIR and get involved, listen to shows like the Ruthie Report and all of the miscellaneous groups throughout the country. It seems like almost every state has some group that is fighting this, and we just really need to all come together and as a united, unified voice, one voice, no amnesty.
We're going to have to, Ruthie, because the fact of the matter is you see the Republicans busy trying to come up with a plan. The Democrats, of course, have tried to push plans over the last 10 years. The Obama administration has stopped all enforcement for the most part, and they, of course, have said this is something they want to get done. But none of these plans include enforcement. If the people of America don't stand up really loud, really hard, and really now, we could get this amnesty. And frankly, there still won't be any enforcement, not from this administration. So in effect, we will have lost our sovereignty. This is ridiculous. There's no other nation in the world that sits by and allows the millions and millions of illegal immigrants in their country to take American jobs or, you know, jobs away from their own citizens and impact the economy and every part of American life. No, there's no other country in the world that allows this. And our elected officials are racing to do whatever they can to make their lives easier, while you and I and the rest of the people and the unemployed Americans and the legal immigrants who are now out of work also are suffering. And honestly, I don't know why anybody goes through the process of legal immigration any longer when you see these people jumping on board to hand them everything and they've done nothing the right way, nothing legal.
Yeah. Now, you do refer to them as illegal immigrants, and I'm going to refer to them as illegal aliens. It's your preference, whichever way I say aliens, you say immigrants, that's fine. But you are correct. It seems if you would take a giant step back and look at the you know, like maybe hover above the United States and look down at what is happening, it is shameful. Shameful the way those that we selected and elected to be our voice in Washington are doing everything they can to falling all over themselves to pander to illegal aliens in this country. And it makes it, you know, I was just thinking the other day, they keep saying, oh, they just want a part of the American dream. They want a part of the American dream. And if I really believe that, it would be a little bit easier to swallow, but I do not. What we are seeing right now is it is no longer the American dream or the legal residence dream. It is now anybody that can come across the border and make demands. It is the illegal aliens dream in this country right now, and it is shameful.
Well, it is, and when you figure there's 5 billion, that's B, with a B, billion people in the world, poorer than the poorest of Mexico, and if you gave them the opportunity, or if they were closer, you know, across the border like Mexico is, and then all of Latin and South America, you know, to follow, we would have 5 billion people here. It wouldn't be limited just to, you know, for the most part, those who come legally and then don't go home, but the entire world. So, you know, I just don't know how we can keep doing this. People are going to have to start solving their own problems in their homeland as long as the United States is the relief valve for all of them to send their people to. We have the highest, you know, sustained unemployment rate that this country's seen in decades, absolute decades. You want to free up jobs for Americans, we need to institute E-Verify and other programs across the board. People who aren't here legally shouldn't have jobs. And take it away from Americans. That should have been the first thing they did, Ruthie. They're not even talking about that. They aren't talking about that.
Exactly. I just wrote an opinion piece, and it's called Washington, I Want to Know. And actually, I did. I do have it here. My material is a little disorganized right now. And that is how I started, and it's a talking points kind of a thing. Washington, I want to know how we continually hear we have to put Americans back to work. But I don't understand then why all of these unemployed Americans are forced to watch illegal aliens taking their jobs.
Well, and then add to the mix that we're not even producing enough new jobs every year to satisfy the job market need from the legal immigrants that we're bringing in here. You know, we're not creating a million new jobs every year, and we still have a million and a half to 2 million sometimes legal immigrants that are coming in here. I don't know how long the United States can keep doing this, and the economy and what you're feeling and the people out of work for these long periods of time. This is all a result of this mass immigration policy that somehow we're supposed to support the rest of the world and just look the other way at our own people. And this is not what we should be doing. That's not good policy for anybody. We should be taking care of our own first. That's a requirement. And the elected officials in Washington should be put out of office by all of the voters in this country for the way that they vote on these issues and not taking care of Americans and then legal immigrants first.
I agree 100%. You know, we really should just clean house in Washington, start over with some of those who remember what the Constitution is and who they are working for, which is we the people. But, you know, when you're talking about unemployment and the American dream, what is a twist of the knife maybe is that you talked about all of these people throughout the planet and the poverty level and the situations that many of these people live in, and then the biggest influx of illegal aliens into the United States are from Mexico. And what drives me totally mad is that for some reason now, they can use the excuse that they just want a better life, like for some reason Americans do not, and because they were successful at spitting on our rule of law and sneaking across the border, fleeing their homeland, I might say, now for some reason we're just supposed to reward them with jobs and entitlements, and they're just supposed to be right up there with the ranking of the American citizen or the legal resident who played by the rules. And they have enough nerve to sit in our country then while being an illegal alien and demand it.
It's amazing.
Such utter
nonsense. The arrogance that I have seen by the dreamers alone, frankly, and their demands and what they think that they're entitled to simply because they're here and breathing our air is phenomenal to me. I don't know what kind of a culture produces people that are that arrogant. But the truth of the matter is that our obligation is to our own people first. We're sick. Our economy's hurting. We have millions and millions of Americans that are out of work. We have millions more that have quit looking for work. We have people who are working in jobs who aren't paying any taxes, who are still getting, you know, filing income tax, and they're getting earned income credits. we have, you know, these same people that are sending billions of dollars out of our country to their own homeland for remittances. You know, you just go right down the list. Let's take the state of California. $22 billion a year illegal immigration was costing them in 2010, so it's even higher than that now. And then another $9 billion a year that the people working there, the immigrants working there, are sending to their homeland. $9 billion goes out of the economy of California. Anybody who's taken economics know every dollar that's earned and then spent back in the state of California will generate another $4. Well, $9 billion has been taken out and is being sent out back home to their homelands from California alone. $47 billion across this nation every year goes to Latin America alone. And this is money. This is American money taken from jobs that should be regenerating our income. And it's not. It's going away never to come back, never ever to come back. This is why we're sick, and nobody in Washington is talking about this. We have, it's an outrage, nothing short of an outrage,
yes.
And everybody should get up and make their voices heard. If they don't now, it's going to be too late.
Well, and you have the remittances, you know, and then you have this additional child tax credit is what they call, and what it is an ITIN number. For those that are in the country that do not have a social security number, they get this ITIN number, and then when they file taxes, they're getting an additional child tax credit. And last year alone, the United States IRS, IRS, sent $4.2 billion in tax refunds to people who are claiming independence in Mexico, then we don't even know if they exist. What?
Right.
Susan.
Right.
They
rewrote our
nonsense.
Tax code a number of years ago to include dependence both in Canada and Mexico. And so you're right. All they have to do is say they have three nieces and five nephews that they're supporting in either Canada and Mexico without any proof. Without any kind of, you know, identification numbers, because we wouldn't be able to prove them anyway if they're not U.S. citizens, and they get to write. I mean, this is just, it is such a slap in the face to those of us who pay our taxes, abide by the rules, live by the code of honor that Americans live under. You know, we're more than happy to help other people who need help, but when we get to the point where we take care of everybody and we're not taking care of our own, we've gone too far, and it's time to stand up and say, you know, no, we're not doing this anymore. We need to take care of our own first. We need to get things right here. The United States is growing from our legal immigration and our illegal immigration. But don't forget, we have, you know, 1.5 million people coming here legally or more each and every year. We are now growing at a faster rate in population than China. We will hit 1 billion people in less than 100 years. We're at 309 million people now. What is this nation going to look like in 100 years when we are more than three times bigger or populated than we currently are? Ruthie, this is not the kind of future that we should be leaving for our children and our grandchildren.
Exactly. And we hear that repeatedly, but apparently nobody in Washington is as smart as you and I and the average patriot, because we've been screaming this stuff, and it's either they're intentionally not listening, they are just so far removed from normal life, or they just do not care. I cannot understand why issues are not being addressed. You know, we hear repeatedly. That's the mantra now on the TV. We're talking about the debt ceiling, and we're talking about how we have to cut spending. We have to cut spending, and FAIR has, I commend you guys, you have done an excellent job with how you do this. I don't know, because finding information is almost next to impossible. But you guys have done an excellent job on the cost of illegal immigration, and I just sent out an email to everyone. Where is it here? You have a website. There's actually an email going out right now, excuse me, where it lists what FAIR has estimated per by state, right?
Yes. Yes, we have a national cost study that shows what the national costs are, $113 billion. And this report that we did, by the way, is already, you know, over 2 years old. It was done in 2010. So those numbers have gone up. But in 2010, the cost across the board for illegal immigration to the United States taxpayers is $113 billion, with $84 billion of that coming from state and local governments alone. That's not federal government. So that is all being absorbed by the state and locals, which equates to U.S. taxpayers in your household, the taxes that you're having to pay to make up for this cost equal $1,117 per native household. So, Ruthie, you and your family, my family, and everybody else who's listening to this, we're all paying the equivalent of $1,117 every year to offset the cost of the illegal aliens who are here. And so basically what we do is we have employers who are giving them jobs without all of the benefits. You and I are picking up the benefits package, and it's costing you and I individually over $1,100 annually, so that employers in the United States can have cheap labor.
Yeah. Now I pulled up Minnesota's from this state by state, and for those that do receive my emails, this was sent out last night. The title of that email is State by State Cost. So go ahead and look it up for your state. But for Minnesota, and this was. It says the population was 20 for 2011. So now, is this part of the 2010 analysis that you did?
It's possible that Minnesota was updated. We updated a number of them, so it's probably for the 2011. And what do you have in Minnesota?
It says $744 million a year is spent on illegal immigration.
Exactly.
$744 million a year. And when I say that, in just in case there's some people out there that think, well, that's only a million, you know what? In Washington, a million and a billion might not be much, but to us taxpayers, that's real money. So now, as I'm reading this, when I pulled this off from Minnesota, you know, it drives me mad that we can't take care of our veterans. We have people losing their homes, living in their cars. We are having to do without. Then we are insulted with this new TV commercial that is, and I don't know if it's playing nationwide, but it did here in Minnesota, where you have two gentlemen standing there, and one says to the other guy, well, it's okay if you have to go to the food shelf. Since when do, at what point are we going to stop this nonsense and take care of ourselves? $744 million for people that have spit on our rule of law, have entered illegally. I don't care how nice they are. I don't care. They could come into our state, our country, like the legal residents have.
And now you can add to that almost 200 million more in Minnesota. Not quite, but between 150 and 200 million more every year from immigrants working in Minnesota sending money back to Latin America alone. So that's another, you know, almost 200 million that's coming out of Minnesota's economy, going away, never to regenerate money. Remember that you, every dollar you spend back in Minnesota is going to generate another $4. For every dollar that's taken out of there, that's an economy that's lost, $4 to every dollar. So almost $200 million. In addition to those real costs that you just said, $747 million is money that's going away and is not regenerating your economy.
And if I could, I just want to share, this is for Minnesota again, so please do look this up, and I'm sure that FAIR has it on their website, and we will give that to you again. If you do not have a piece of paper and pencil, I suggest you get one so that when Susan and I do go through all this again, you can write it down. But for Minnesota, we have $367 million a year to educate the children of illegal aliens. We have $99.4 million on unreimbursement of health care, 62.8 for criminal justice, 77.2 million on welfare for illegal aliens, which, by the way, we continually are told they're not eligible for, but apparently 77.2 million of it went somewhere, 138 million a year for additional state and local operating costs, and 734 annually cost to each Minnesota's native-born headed household. Now, when you say this number that you gave before, Susan, of almost 1,100, that's nationwide, right?
No, that's, yes, it is. So,
yeah, nationwide.
So when you take the cost, you know, because some of these costs will be federal, some will be state. So some people, depending on where the numbers are higher, you know, from a state standpoint, when we're just doing state by state, that number is going to change. But overall, when you take the total number for the United States, it equated across the board to $1,100 a year per family to pay for, offset the cost. Your costs aren't going to be as high in Minnesota as they are in California, for instance, but they also have a bigger population. So we do this just so you can see, you know, the average. So if you take just Minnesota costs, and so on, then it equates, just Minnesota cost equates to $744 per family there. But when you take the nation's cost as a whole, and then you do it as an average across the citizenship, that number goes up much higher to $1,117 annually. So, you know, and this is K-12 education too, so who knows how much more you're spending when you start getting into college educations and who's getting help and who's not. You know, you may not know that because they may be just going on and the colleges aren't checking that they really don't have legal presence and they're getting in-state tuition. So it's hard to know. And let me tell you,
now,
too, that FAIR always is very conservative in these estimates. We use the census data numbers. We use a lot of other numbers. And, of course, we know that that those numbers are low. So this would be a very conservative figure, not a high figure, but a very conservative figure. Your costs are probably actually much higher than that.
Is there, and I do not know if there's a way to do this, I don't know really how, but you would know much better than I would. For example, with the Storm Sandy, there was an article where they were trying to have advocates go out and help these illegal aliens who had lost everything. And the quote in the article was, is this gentleman was looking for help and assistance because he had all of his money that he had made illegally working, illegally in the country, hidden in the basement, which means that he's getting paid cash under the table. So is there a way to estimate, I don't know how, but all of the money that is not being put back into our tax system by those that are not declaring, that are getting paid under the table. Is that also figured into this?
No.
Is there a
no,
way to figure that? I don't
know
how.
That's total speculation. You know, I'm sure that, you know, some of this, I mean, the numbers, again, you know, are skewed. And the Labor Department estimates there's 7 million illegal aliens working in the United States. Well, you know and I know that you know, everybody for years they've said there's 13 million. You know, millions more keep coming, but there's still only 13 million. So only 50% of them are unemployed? I don't believe that. When Doris Meisner, they were looking at the DACA, the deferred action students, the Dreamers, that Obama just granted amnesty to for a two-year period, she said more than 50% of them already had jobs. I mean, they're going to give them work permits so they can go to work, but 50% of them are already working. So you know, here we're talking about an entire shadow population. Not only don't we know how many of them are working or how they're being paid or if they're paying any taxes at all or what their situation is, let's get to the bigger issue. We don't know who they are. We don't know why they're here. You know, repeatedly we've heard from ICE, when they do deportations and they do background checks on who they're sending out of here, a full 16 to 28% are criminals in their homeland. So, you know, many of the people who come here illegally come because they're fleeing their own country because the law is after them there. We don't know who these people are. We don't know what they're paying. We don't know how many we have employed. And we have to be an absolute joke to the rest of the world, Ruthie. We have a system, one of the best tracking systems in the world that could be used. We check people into the United States when they come, but we don't check them out. There's nobody else in the world who does that. You go travel to Europe, you go travel to Mexico, you go travel to any other country. They want to know where you are, when you're leaving, where you're staying, how long you're going to be there. And if you don't show up, they're going to come looking for you. We don't do that. The United States doesn't do that. We are a joke to the rest of the world.
We have to be a laughingstock. I mean, we have to be. You know, we talk so big and bold and, you know, we used to speak softly but carry a big stick. Remember that? Now, I don't think anybody takes us seriously anymore. Can you really? I mean, seriously. And you were just talking about those, who is entering the country? How do we know who they even are? And it's funny because later on tonight I have a story that I'm going to relay to the listeners where it says the police chief says that 75% of Tijuana's crimes are committed by migrants, the ones that we have sent back, that were here, and we sent them back. I mean, the insanity of this, Susan, is just, it's astounding. I mean, it's almost too hard to grasp.
It is. And let me tell you one of the things that I have been calling for, asking for members of Congress, asking for people, you know, to tell their members of Congress, before we talk about another amnesty, let's go take a look at the almost 4 million people we amnestied in 1986. By the way, Republicans, none of them, you know, there wasn't some, if amnestying people makes people turn vote Republican because they leave the charge, that should have happened after 1996 because it was President Reagan and Bush at the time who led that amnesty. But I can tell you that I have interviewed ICE agents, the ICE agents who deport people after they come out of the jail system because they've committed crime. And if you're here as a legal immigrant, you commit a crime, do jail time, you're probably going to get deported when you come out, or at least that used to be the case, may not be now. But, I mean, right this, you know, today because of the Obama administration. But I interviewed ICE agents in the agency responsible for deporting criminals after they served their time in Ohio, in Alabama, and in Oklahoma. And they all said across the board, 99.9% of the people they were sending back after they'd done jail time were 1986 amnesty recipients. Ruthie, it seems to me that before we do this again, we need to find out what the 4 million people who were granted amnesty in 1986 went on to do with their lives in the United States. Are they hard workers? Are they college grads? Have they become citizens? Or are they in jail? Because it's really interesting that I also interviewed a jail guard from Folsom Prison in California, which is a high-security prison. It means you're a really bad person if you're there. And he told me that 90% of the people who are in his jail are the children of 1986 amnesty recipients. They have no respect for this country. Their parents were given citizenship. They didn't earn it, and they have no appreciation for who they are, and they are the guys that are, they are the children of those amnesty recipients that are sitting in Folsom Prison today.
Do you have you written an article or an opinion piece, or is something posted on FAIR from these interviews? Because that is something that people should really hear. And, you know, if it isn't for groups and organizations and people like you and I continuing to speak out and spreading the word, they're not going to hear it. Do you have something with that in it?
I don't, because these are personal interviews I've done with people who have opened up to me and told me what, you know, what they've said. And so this is what I have called for. Before we do an amnesty, the United States government knows who these people are. They know how to find them, and they know how to find out what has happened to them since they were granted amnesty in 1986. Take the time. We've been playing with this for 20 years. what's another year or so while the GAO or somebody else, the CBO, whoever you want to have do this report does it. Let's find out where those people are today before we do this again. Don't you think when you step up to the plate and you say we're going to do something that you should know if it's going to work or if it did work? Doesn't that seem like a logical thing for our government, you know, a logical first step to take? Let's go see what happened in 1986 and where those people are today.
You know, we keep hearing how it will improve the America and the United States and all this. That is a very good point. What did they do with the gift that they were given as a reward? How did this play out for the United States? Was it a benefit? Is it a wash? Was it cost incurred and actually, you know, no gain? That is really interesting. I guess I never thought of what those who were given a pass in 1986 actually did with their lives. I've never even thought about that. That is,
well, and I think it's a logical first step. And frankly, I think that people need to be calling the Republican leadership as well as their Democrat leadership and say, you know what, before we go down this path, let's find out. You proved to me that this was a good deal and in the best interest in the United States and where we are today, that this, you know, was actually overall a good thing, because frankly, based on the people I've interviewed and the people in law enforcement that I've talked to, that isn't even close to being the case. Not when they're saying it's 99.9% of the people they're deporting after serving jail time or recipients from 1986. I'm guessing that wasn't a really good choice on our part. And I'm thinking that this time we could do it, you know, anywhere between 10 and 20 million people, maybe higher. Is this really something we want to do? We have plenty of homegrown criminals now. We don't need any more. And we certainly don't.
Yeah, we have enough of our own. Yes, really,
you know,
truly
and
do.
And the other thing, Ruthie, you know, that people don't talk about, once we legalize them, once we have granted them amnesty, they are now eligible for even more benefits, because they weren't eligible for a lot of things. You're right. You know, you say, well, I don't know how they did that because they're not supposed to be eligible. They aren't. But once they're here legally, once they're given a path, even if it's just a legal path, it doesn't have to be citizenship, they are entitled to all of the same benefits that everybody else is. So those costs are going to go higher. They're just going to skyrocket.
Well, and there's costs such as this pending treason, this pending, Obamacare, where we are told that illegal aliens will not be covered. Well, you know, it's such an insult to our intelligence is what it is. For them to stand in Washington, especially Obama, and tell us it's not going to be covered when you and I already know that their health care is being funded on the backs of the American taxpayer through the EMTALA Act now. You know, health care, I don't know how we would even figure out. In Minnesota, yours was a $99.4 million a year just in unreimbursed health care. How many hospitals have we had along the border close? Over 80 now, isn't it, that have closed because they just went broke providing health care to illegal aliens and not getting reimbursed.
You know, there's so many stories that go untold, you know, and that's part of it. You know, the county, almost all the county hospitals in the state of California have now shut down because of, if you have an emergency room, you must treat, and it, regardless of ability to pay. So they don't even ask, and so that's exactly what happens. But, you know, I have interviewed in Los Angeles, there was a hospital that had to shut down because someone has health care or health insurance, and then 10 other people come and they get their health care under their name and their insurance policy. And so they have gone now. I mean, it's amazing what you have to do in order to prove that you are who you are when you go into the hospital in some of those places to even get health care. But I just had a report, and I'm going to be investigating it later this year, that along the border in Arizona that in New Mexico, they are running school buses across or to the border to pick up students that are coming in from Mexico to attend K through 12 classes. And we've been told the reason is Mexico, if the children are anchor babies, if they were born here as U.S. citizens, but their families went back across the border, and they came over here to have the baby so that they would be able to have American benefits and get the health care costs of the birth and so on paid for, and then, of course, you know, money if they need it during the month and all the other benefits that that child who's now an American citizen is entitled to. Some of these families still live on the other side of the border, even though their child's an American citizen, but the Mexican government will not allow them in their schools. So they are having to walk to the border, and the buses are going to the border to pick up these hundreds of children to take them to American schools because the Mexican government will not even grant them the education. And yet,
so,
what does the Mexican government expect of America?
I can hardly, you know, I don't know why I'm surprised. I shouldn't be surprised, but I am very surprised by that. So let me rephrase what you just said. It's Mexican citizens who came across the country, came across the border illegally, had children here. Those children are now anchor babies, as we refer to them. They decided to go back. The parents took their children with them. They are now back in their home country, but because the children were born in the United States, they refused to let them attend school in Mexico?
Yes, that's the report. I've got a person who's in law enforcement who sees these buses. I'm going down to investigate this along the Arizona and Mexican border. Now, these are border towns, so maybe even the mother just came across and gave birth so she'd have a U.S. citizen child, as opposed to a Mexican citizen, and to receive the benefits. But now that the Mexican government knows that the child was born in the United States, they will not educate them, so they have to get them to the border. And then these buses in these small U.S. towns along the border are going to pick up these children by the hundreds to take them to school every day, because it's, which is amazing to me, because I don't know how they have the jurisdiction to do that. I mean, in most states, you know, you have to go to the school in your own school district. I don't know how you can go to a school when it's not even in your country, even if you are a U.S. citizen. I mean, they're not in a jurisdiction. So I can't tell you the intricacies of how this all works, but I can tell you that I'm headed for the border towns in the next few months to find out what's going on.
I would love to go with you. Two, this has to stop. And number three, the gall of Mexico. I cannot believe the canolas that this country thinks that they have when it comes to the United States. They will not let these children attend schools in Mexico, but they seem to think that they can stick their nose into, like, say, our gun rights, because they just weighed in on that, or they can send a legal brief to our court systems asking Arizona not to enforce our laws because it hampers their citizens. I mean, Susan, we started this whole conversation with take a giant step back, and nobody would believe what they're seeing.
Oh, and it's so much worse than what I'm even telling you, because this is a lot of information for people to take in. But I just spent the last week, I just got back last night. I was in California, and there are places out there on a regular basis. First of all, if you think that it's not bad enough that they've got American jobs, that they're working without paying taxes, they're receiving benefits, you know, that they're not entitled to, go right down the list of things. Add to this that the drug cartels are so infiltrated that the California legislature now has a supermajority of Democrats, many, many of them militant against the United States and very much supportive of Mexican and anything the Mexicans would like to do. They now have introduced this last week a bill that would give all illegal aliens driver's licenses in the state of California. But because of this general corruptness that is going on in the state of California, this I won't cooperate with ICE and illegal immigrants are our best friends attitude, they have a whole underground of further illegal activity. I have for fact they are selling piranhas all over the state of California because they can be brought up from South America and Central America, and people like to own exotic animals. So they're selling piranhas. I want you to think about what happens when you have this cool little piranha that grows to 16 inches and you can't afford to feed it anymore because it's eating a rump roast a day, and you have to dump it somewhere. So where you take it to Lake Tahoe, you take it to Lake Isabel, you take it to the rivers or lakes in the state of California. These exotic animals are being brought in, frogs, turtles, piranha fish, you name it. There's, in these swap meets all over the state of California, they have Mexican prescription drugs that are being sold. You can buy injectables. Walking through, they're being sold by 13- and 14-year-olds at swap meets. It's right on. It's all been smuggled in and brought in from the state of California, from Mexico, but it's all being sold in open-air market that nobody's enforcing.
California, I didn't mean that. That was a slip. California officials, the administration, the government there, California has to know what's happening, correct?
Some people know. Some of them are. It has become such a corrupt system that some of them are making money because they do know and they're willing to look the other way. I can't tell you. I can't tell you how it all breaks down. I can tell you that having been in law enforcement in the state of California, the state is on the brink of total and utter chaos when it comes to illegal activity and the undermining of the rule of law. And if people are listening to this radio show from around the nation, so goes California, goes the rest of this nation. One of the reasons I got involved in this issue 20 years ago is because what was happening was almost exclusively at the time happening in California. And when I used to come back into the Midwest and I talk about illegal immigration, people in Minnesota and other places looked at me like I was from Mars. And they said, we really don't know what you're talking about. We don't have, you know, the kind of problems you're talking about. I said, it's just a matter of time. You really need to listen to me because it's just a matter of time. Well, I'm telling all of your listeners again tonight, if what I'm saying to you sounds like, you know, the most corrupt Latin American narco-terrorist nation in the world is happening in California, and it is just a matter of time. If we continue to look the other way, to engage people and pretend when they've broken the law they've done nothing, in fact, that we should somehow be compassionate for them. If we can't go back to saying, no, in this nation, right is right, wrong is wrong, we're going to enforce those who do not do right, and we should, to the letter of the law, we are not going to be in any better shape than what they're in California.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, it's a flipping nightmare.
Well, and I have a story later, too, where several gentlemen were just sentenced because they are, it's within the Mexican mafia system, and they are trying to cleanse, is the word they use, ethically cleanse Southern California, and are pushing the blacks out. I've reported on this before, but this, you know, it's getting alarming. Some of these stories are just so hard to believe, Susan, and people are just, you know, those people that just are not aware, don't listen to the news, maybe don't watch any news, maybe read their local newspaper if they're lucky, or their little channel news, they have no clue what is headed this way.
I believe truly that even the people in Washington, you know, are immune from knowing how bad it really is. They sit in Washington and they sit in their offices and they have people come and talk to them about, you know, their difficulties for some kid getting into college or whatever. You know, that is nothing compared to what we're talking about. They have no clue how bad it really is. And they think that we're all nuts. I mean, they think that we're extremists to say,
yeah,
you know, you need to get out there. But I promise you, I will put a challenge out right now. Any congressman or U.S. senator who wants to go and see what I could show them in 3 days in the state of California, what's going on in there, you give me a call because I'll take you and I will show you that what I'm saying is absolutely true. And it just scraping the very, very top. Nobody has even gotten to the tip of the iceberg here. I'm telling you, it's amazing. When I talk to people in forestry where entire parts of the United States forests out there are being used to grow marijuana by the drug cartels, they have taken over in a huge way. Huge way. And Ruthie, nobody's doing anything, or they're doing very little. This administration has absolutely put the brakes on enforcement. It's almost as if anything goes. And that is the message that's been sent to those who conduct illegal activities, that it is a free-for-all, and that's exactly where we're headed.
And, you know, my husband and I and our children lived in Northern California, way Northern California, for a couple of years, 5 to 6 years. And we had gone for an anniversary out to this remote castle, and it was a bed and breakfast kind of thing that had turned into a bed and breakfast, and it's out in the middle of nowhere, gorgeous, just super beautiful. And we get there, and they kind of showed us around. There was going to be 3 or 4 couples there, and they told us not to hike over that horizon. And, you know, at the time, it just didn't even dawn on me, and, you know, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And I said, well, why can't we go hiking over that horizon if we want? And she said, well, because the cartels are out there growing pot. This is in early 90s. I was just stunned that a bed and breakfast, the owners can tell people where to walk and where not to walk because they know what's happening and it's not in your best interest to go out there.
Predict that if we don't get a handle on the drug cartels from Mexico, they're going to make the Italian mafia look like, you know, a street hood, you know, just a neighborhood gang. These guys are not stopping at just drug running to the United States. They're setting up routes all over the world. That's been verified. The FBI just arrested a number of them over in Spain that had come to the United States. They had worked in New Hampshire and some of the other eastern states here, setting up these routes, getting it into the U.S., and then I'm guessing using U.S. citizens or whatever else they had to do, but they're setting up routes from the United States to Europe. They're going all over the world. Nothing is going to stop them. And if you talk to the experts, we just did a national sheriff's border school down in Texas, and we brought in some top terrorism experts and top drug cartel experts from around the country, and they will tell you clearly that they are using techniques that have never been used before. It's narco-terrorism. These guys are more dangerous than you could possibly imagine. They're recruiting our kids right out of high school. They're recruiting kids that are going into accounting, that are becoming lawyers. They're not recruiting the guy with the tattoos, you know, that looks like the gangbanger. They're recruiting white-collar-looking people so that they can, because these are businessmen. They're not just...
Yep.
You know, it's incredible the level of crime that we're talking about and the impact that they're going to have on this nation. And we're just sitting by saying, oh, it's just a bunch of people who want to come here and have the American dream. No, Ruthie.
We're sitting back saying how we have to be more welcoming. Oh, please. Okay, now, back kind of to the financial end. Now, when Susan and I had spoke earlier this week, you had given me some of the, like, financial facts. Like, for example, Oregon. Let's start it this way. Let's go down kind of the list. What do you think, or do you know, or what, in your opinion, what is the biggest cost of issue, you know, like education, criminal welfare? What is the biggest cost to the American taxpayer and citizen via illegal immigration?
The single biggest cost across the board, state by state, doesn't matter which one you pick, is educating the children of illegal aliens K-12. Number one, always. It's about 50% in most cases.
And I have seen that everywhere. No matter where you look, it's always the education. Yep. Now, what would be another that down the road. When you listed these here, let's see here, I was just going to look. Next on this list is healthcare.
Yeah, second almost always is, and sometimes they change, depending on which state you're talking about. It's usually the next one is the Medicaid, so that would be the healthcare. And then the next one is the justice system for the number of people that are incarcerated. And so, and sometimes those can switch places. In Minnesota, for instance, it's K-12 education, then it's Medicaid, and then the justice, and then welfare, and then general costs after that. Oregon, for instance, as you just happened to mention, is K-12, and then the next largest one is the justice system. It's really interesting that Oregon has rates about number three per capita of incarcerated illegal aliens in their system. Who knew? We didn't know until we did this report.
If you're listening in Oregon, did you just hear that? You're number three for incarceration. And that surprised me. I would have never guessed Oregon.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't have. I would have guessed Texas, New York, California. You know, I guess Oregon didn't. North Carolina's got to be awful close, too. They're having a hell of a hard time out there with crime.
Well, you know, any of the states that have a fast illegal alien growing population, any of the states who've rolled out the red carpet to illegal aliens, we can go down the list and name, you know, that's California, Illinois, New York's trying really hard, New Jersey, you know, to do different things, in-state tuition. Go down any of the times that they've kind of rolled out the red carpet and made them welcome, they've come there in mass, and they're going to have higher costs. The states that have tried to pass legislation, Arizona, Oklahoma, you know, Georgia, and those are not the ones that are growing quickly in the illegal alien population. They're seeing their costs increase. They've actually seen them decrease. Arizona finally, for the first time, has money to spend in their education. They were in the red. When they passed the Arizona law, they had families move out. And for the first time, Chris Kobach has written about this in Georgetown Law Journal, that they have money. And so, you know, so it depends on what the state's doing and what kind of a atmosphere they set up for illegal aliens.
And, of course, you know, there's no way to put a financial dollar amount on the human cost, you know, for those families that are suffering or have lost due to someone who shouldn't have been in the country to begin with. But so now, Susan, do you have, I know I'm going to keep you over just a few minutes more, but do you have any interesting stats or cost comparisons that you would like to share that we haven't discussed?
Not that I can think of. I really think that when people though talk about this issue in a full cost, and you can go to our website, you can pull up the national cost study that tells you all of the national costs. We have it broken down state by state, so you can do that as well. You can contact me, and I'll share that with you. But you need to understand, again, that these are very conservative estimates, that this cost study, in some cases, depending on what state they are, up to, you know, now 2 years old. But the other part of this is not just the cost, but it's the remittances. It's the money that's being sent out of the state. It's the jobs that are being held by illegal aliens where the taxes aren't being collected at all. They're not paying their social. It's being paid under the table instead of above the board. You know, and then add to that all of the other social things that happen, the overcrowded. I mean, how do you put a price, Ruthie, on the fact that you had to spend 5 hours or 6 hours waiting in an emergency room in the state of California to see a doctor because it was overcrowded with people who don't have a right to be there? You know, so those kind of costs, the everyday costs, traveling down the road because there's 20 million more people in your state than there should be, you know, how do you put a price on all of that? But then the next question I really want to ask is, where does it stop? Because when you have a Congress who's rolling out the red carpet right now to say, you know, we're worried about where your vote might be in the future if and when you become a citizen, we want to welcome you with open arms. Millions of people are making preparation and arrangements and plans right now to come to the United States. That's exactly what happened in 1986. We had 3 to 4 million then. We now have 13 to 20 million. How many more will we have in 20 years? Because none of what they're proposing is going to end or secure the borders once and for all, or make sure that we don't have employers doing things they shouldn't be doing. And frankly, it's hard for me to blame someone from another country for coming here and breaking the law, because we're not doing anything about it. But I do put the responsibility squarely on the backs of the United States employers who are hiring these people knowingly and laughing all the way to the bank while you and I pick up the costs.
Yep. Well, and nothing is being said about the family unification plan that you and I are very aware will have to, you know, we've passed how many, 7 or 8 amnesties since 1986, and half of them were to bring, another 200,000 to come from this amended amnesty and this amended. Well, this is just ludicrous. It really is.
Well, there was only one real amnesty in 1986, so this would be, you know, if they proposed one. But they proposed it a dozen times. There's been about a dozen different ways, you know, for years you could adjust your status once you were here through a process they called, as I remember, 245I or something, you know, like that. But you know, those have gone away. But we still have family chain migration. So if they legalize all of these people, then they can turn around and bring their family members, and that's not immediate family members. That's in some cases pretty extended family members here. So as we've always said before, when we do these proposals, if we're going to bring in, if we're going to legalize 12 to 20 million, that equates to, through family chain migration, probably 80 or 100 million. You know, so, I mean, it's phenomenal. And again, Ruthie, let's go back as American citizens. Let's demand that they prove to us that 1986 was a really good idea and that all these people went on to do wonderful things, because, frankly, I don't think that's the case, and I'd like to see it before I would vote for anything if I were in Congress. I'd demand it.
And I think that is just an awesome idea. I am so glad you shared that with us, because that didn't even dawn on me, and it's an excellent, excellent idea. Now, I have one more question before I then thank you, and again, so sorry about all the problems tonight. I have one more question, and then if you would, again, share with everyone your information. I did not give your email out. I do not know if you want to or not, so I did not share that. But my last question before we let you go then is, I know FAIR works with or addresses or communicates with the politicians in Washington on this issue all of the time. Why is it that they're not getting it? I mean, we have FAIR, we have other organizations that keep sending the message home. Why is it that Washington is not hearing us?
They're not hearing us because they have big business, and there are Republicans that are supporting big business. And there's a group of people down in Texas, and they include George Bush and others, big money Republicans, who are saying this is a losing situation for Republicans. They need to shut up about this. They need to grant amnesty. They need to embrace immigrants, or we're never going to get elected again. But the truth is just the opposite. And so this has been the continued fight in this country that nobody really talks about, that the politicians are being bought out by big business, by the ag industry. Go right down the list of people who use cheap, illegal alien labor, and they have the ear of some big money people in the Republican Party, and they are convincing them because this is somehow going to be a good strategy for them, and they're selling out the American people. Again,
Chamber of Commerce.
And the Chamber of Commerce, absolutely, absolutely.
Yep.
So that's what we're up against, and I'm telling you, the people need to go. They need to sign up. we need to make an all-out push. We need to clean house in Washington for anybody who supports and votes for this kind of policy for the United States. It's killing us, and it's going to be the end of us.
Thank you so much, Susan, for being – you have an open invitation. Anytime you would like to come on, you just let me know. Or if you have something, you know, breaking news or something, just go ahead and get a hold of me. And, again, I thank you, and I'm sorry about all the problems.
No problem. And Ruthie, people can email me. It's S for Susan. Tully is my last name, T-U-L-L-Y, at fairus.org. So it's S Tully at fairus.org. And I'd be happy talk to anybody.
And the website is www.fairus.org. Now, remember, it's not .com, it's .org. www.fairus.org. Thank you so much, Susan, for being my guest
this
evening.
Thank you, Ruthie. Absolutely.
All right.
Good night.
All right. Good night. Now, what we are going to do is we're going to switch gears here because of the problems that Blog Talk was having at the 8 o'clock hour. We are going to continue on as if we're just going to do everything backwards is what we're going to do. Generally speaking, our guest would be coming on and we would have done the news. Tonight, we are going to take our first break. We are going to come back. We are going to have tonight's Criminally and or Insane segment. I warn you, some of it is a little graphic. There's an animal cruelty issue tonight that, you know, so if you have kids in the room. But please stay tuned. We are going to take our first break. When we come back, we will have Criminally and or Insane.
A little bit hard to understand, but I only wanna be a modern man on the wire. We couldn't be nicer. Just think about the one that got away. Nobody wanna give my heart away. You can make your mind up. You can take your time up. It seems you mistaken me for someone who cares. I'm just a dirt.
Report. Thank you for tuning in. Today is January 17th, 2013. We did have a little problems with Blog Talk Radio. We are doing the show backwards this evening. I hope you had tuned in to hear the interview with Susan Tully. If not, the show is archived. You must hear the information she gave. So now what we are going to do is tonight's Criminally and or Insane segment. So let's get right to it. This is from KXXV.com out of McGregor, Texas. An illegal immigrant has been arrested by police after being accused of sexually assaulting a McGregor woman. 34-year-old Jamin Sanchez Ofertas was charged with sexual assault and attempted sexual assault. McGregor Police Joe Coy said an investigation began after a 30-year-old woman complained that she was sexually assaulted by Mr. Sanchez. Investigators said a third-party witness confirmed the complaint that the victim was attacked twice during the month of December at her home. During the course of the investigation, it was also determined that Mr. Sanchez Antoros had been in the country illegally, had been previously deported, and had since reentered the country again illegally. He is in the McLean County Jail on state charges and on Department of Homeland Security and immigration detainer. Now, when I looked this one up, apparently this is a family of sorts sexual assault. Not that that means anything, but you should be aware that apparently he was living there as well. You know, is this just another one of the examples of what family unity is going to be down the road? And I do mean that with all sarcasm involved. Next, this is an ICE release. This one happens to be from Lexington, Kentucky. ICE arrests 39 during two-day operation. It says 39 convicted criminal aliens, immigration fugitives, and immigration violators were arrested during a two-day operation in Lexington. Of the 39 arrested, 36 had convictions for crimes such as assault, possessing a concealed deadly weapon, hit and run, drunken driving, aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer, domestic violence, and drug possession. One of the convicted criminals was also an immigration fugitive who had been previously ordered to leave the country but failed to depart. Of three individuals arrested who did not have any criminal convictions, they had been previously removed and illegally reentered the United States, making them an enforcement priority for ICE. Anyone who reenters the United States after having been previously deported commits a felony punishable by up to 20 years in federal prison. Now, before I continue with the article, wouldn't it be nice if they'd actually enforce it, though? You know, we know what the laws are. It's not that we don't know that. It's just that they're not being enforced. Of the 39 men arrested in Lexington, 38 are from Mexico, and one is from Honduras. Here are two summaries of two of the individuals. One was a 38-year-old Mexican national who had prior convictions for possessing a controlled substance and assault causing bodily harm and injury of a family member. He was deported in 2005 and illegally reentered the United States. He was arrested January 12th and remains in ICE custody. The second one, 33-year-old Mexican national who had a prior criminal convictions for aggravated assault on a police officer, first-degree indecent exposure, and endangering the welfare of a child. Oh, God. He was arrested January 13th and remains in custody. Now, these are ICE releases, by the way, this one and the next one. This also from ICE, from Grand Rapids, Michigan. 97 convicted criminal aliens, immigration fugitives, and other immigration violators were arrested in a four-day operation in West Michigan. Of the 97 arrested, 60 had prior convictions for crimes such as sex with a minor, assault, illegal firearm possession, drug possession, and theft. 23 are immigration fugitives who had been previously ordered to leave the country but failed to depart. 11 others had previously been deported and illegally reentered the United States. Let's see here. A breakdown in nationality is of the 86 men and 11 women. 66 were from Mexico, 18 Guatemala, 3 Honduras, Laos 2, the Dominican Republic were 2, Canada 1, Romania, Cambodia, Vietnam, India, and Thailand each had 1. three of the examples. 39-year-old Laotian man with a previous conviction for criminal sexual conduct with a minor, assault on a female, and petty theft. He was arrested January 8th at a residence in Holland and will remain in ICE custody. Another one, a 38-year-old Mexican man who was previously deported, has a prior conviction for firearm possession. I'm going to keep saying that all night long, firearm possession, but of course we got to, you know, make laws and rules and regulations that are detrimental or an attack on the lawful American citizen. Okay, he had firearm possession. He was arrested January 7th. The U.S. Attorney's Office has accepted this case for criminal prosecution. And a 56-year-old man who has a prior conviction for assault with a dangerous weapon, and he was arrested January 6th. He will stay in ICE custody pending removal. You know, you can do this all night long. Moving on. This is a warning. If you have children in the room, or if you are an extreme animal lover, you may not want to listen to this next item. I started with watch your pets. This is dated January 14th by Dave Gibson. The title is Mexican Drug Cartels Using Dogs to Practice Their Torture Techniques. Lemon Pie Gets Another Chance. Over the last several years, as the drug cartels have taken operational control of Mexico, the sight of dismembered bodies dumped in the streets has become a daily occurrence in that country. The cartels often practice their torture techniques on animals and actually saw off the paws and limbs of live dogs before moving to their human targets. If the dog survives the ordeal, they are usually left to bleed to death, suffering an incredibly painful end. One of those dogs that did survive was discovered last year inside a trash can inside a city in the central Mexican state of Zacatecas. His front paws had been severed. Rescuers named the pooch Lemon Pie. Lemon Pie, a Belgian shepherd, was taken to Canine Miracles, a sanctuary in the southern outskirts of Mexico City, where he was nursed back to health and actually fitted with prosthetic legs. Sanctuary owner Patricia Ruiz told The Telegraph that the drug traffickers would pretend that they were cutting the fingers off of people they had kidnapped. The sanctuary staff raised over more than $6,000 and purchased a pair of prosthetic limbs from a company in Colorado for Lemon Pie. Rez says that he now can walk, can run, and I tell you that he has absolutely everything. The only thing he doesn't have are legs, but we gave them to him. Canine Miracles is currently home to 128 abused and neglected dogs. Many of the dogs require the use of wheelchairs to run and play on the sanctuary expansive grounds. End article. Oh my God. What kind of insane, heartless dirtbags do something like this? Really, think about this. The dogs are alive when they're doing this. Mexico is out of control. It is out of control. We have to secure that border, and we have to secure it now. Jeez. As I alluded to in our interview, Susan and I, this is from VDare.com by Alan Wall. It's dated January 13th. The Mexican police chief of a major city has announced that 75% of the crime committed in his city is committed by migrants. Isn't that controversial? No, because this is a Mexican police chief speaking about a Mexican city. Specifically, it was Javier, I do not know how to pronounce his name. He is the police chief of Tijuana, Mexico, which is across the border from San Diego. A big problem that Tijuana has is that illegal aliens deported from the United States wind up there. And instead of returning to their homes elsewhere, most of them stay in Tijuana. Allen includes this. This is from the Pumas de Migrants en Tijuana, posted by the SanDiegoRed.com on January 8th. It says, each day an estimated 600 persons repatriate from the United States, to Tijuana. Only about 50 of the 60 can be sent back to their country, or which causes the problems for Tijuana and its police. It says the majority of these people are criminals, and that's why they were deported. Are you kidding me? Repatriated, Are you kidding me? Seriously? So in a nutshell, what I just said is it's their citizens that fled, entered the United States, get caught, get deported, back home, and that's a problem for Tijuana. Are you kidding me? Seriously? I can't hardly believe some of this stuff that's in print anymore. I tell you what, let's cut out the middleman. Secure Mexico. Secure your northern border. And it will be your problem alone. The insanity, people. This is just insane. They are complaining about their crime rate of citizens that were deported from the United States because they're in the country illegally. You know, it's almost to the point where it doesn't make any sense anymore. It's hard to follow the game here. Moving on. This is a WorldNet Daily exclusive by an Aaron Klein. It's published January 9th, and the title is Real Gun Threat, Illegal Alien Street Gangs. Now, I have several stories, too, actually, that I'm going to read. I'm going to read this one and another one to you with commentary that kind of include both. This one from Aaron says, with the national debate focused on civilian gun control, is perhaps the biggest armed threat within the United States being minimized. According to the FBI, criminal street gangs, mostly comprised of illegal aliens, are acquiring high-powered military-style weapons to potentially engage in lethal encounters with law enforcement members and citizens alike. Criminal street gangs are responsible for the majority of violent crimes within the United States and are the primary distributors of most illicit drugs, according to a 2009 report by the Justice Department's National Drug Intelligence Center. In 2010, the agency's National Drug Threat Assessment stated that drugs were being sold on behalf of the cartels in more than 2,500 cities. Then, in 2011, official assessment that the number was reduced to 1,000 cities, meaning that in 1 year, criminal drug gangs were cleaned out of 1,500 cities, resulting in a 60% reduction. Really? Really? Dave Gibson, a columnist for TheExaminer.com, asked, where were the press releases? Why isn't the Obama campaign talking about this rather astounding feat every day? Exactly. Dave has it exactly right. If they had taken from 2,500 cities and in 1 year went below 1,000, you could bet that they would be broadcasting that everywhere. Except the NDIC's reports were entirely removed now from the Justice Department website. An attempt to access the report brings up a page that says, this website is no longer maintained and may contain dated information. In 2011, FBI report draws a far dimmer picture of the nature of criminal gang operating domestically. It states the report, quote unquote, there are an estimated 1.4 million active street, prison, and outlaw motorcycle gang members in more than 33,000 gangs operating in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. Let me read that to you again. There are an estimated 1.4 million gang members in more than 33,000 gangs operating in all 50 states. Don't hear anything about that, do we? And then we have this. This is by the Los Angeles Times. This is the second article before I go to commentary here, dated January 15th. A leader of the Azusa 13 Street Gang and his son were sentenced in federal court Monday. Again, this is dated January 15th. To lengthy prison terms after pleading guilty to conspiring to attack blacks and force them to leave the city. Santiago Chico Reyes was sentenced to 19 years and 7 months in U.S. prison by U.S. District Judge Gary Fies. His son, Louis Little Chico Reyes, who is hearing impaired and required a sign language interpreter, received 10 years. Both Rioses have Azus tattooed above their upper lips. Louis Rios has Azusa gang member tattooed on the back of his head as well. At the sentencing, the judge said that Santiago was a proponent of the racial cleansing of the city of Azusa and an admitted participant in every significant aspect of gang activities. The Rioses and 49 other Azusa gang members were arrested in June of 2011 and charged with, among other things, a conspiracy to cleanse the city of its black residents, according to the prosecutors. All 51 have been convicted. 8 remain to be sentenced. Santiago, he was a key holder and a shot caller within the Mexican mafia. In that position, he implemented the Azusa 13 policy dating from 1992 of targeting and harassing black people in the city. The gang would assault blacks they spotted in public places. Some gang recruits were even asked to attack blacks as a way of proving their worth to the gang, according to the plea agreement. It said, when several gang members were released on parole in 1999 and 2000, normally quiet, Azusa saw its hate crimes rate skyrocket over the next 3 years as gang members attacked black residents. In one case, a 49-year-old woman was shot and wounded outside her apartment as she was saying goodnight to a friend. A gang member later testified that the group of members had shot her after going hunting for blacks and finding no men to shoot. Since that time, Azusa police arrested several of the recent parolees who are now serving lengthy prison sentences. Federal prosecutors then mounted a broader case against the gang that ended up in the 2011 arrests. Since then, police have reported no hate crimes connected to the gang. Where is the mainstream media? Why is this not being reported? If you are not listening to the Ruthie Report or reading the emails, would you have even heard about this? Maybe if you're a poor, you know, a, not poor, but unfortunate black man that's being targeted in Southern California by the Mexican mafia. I have reported on this racial violence between the Mexican gangs and blacks before, many times actually. We have heard so much out of Washington about Washington being worried about our safety, how we must pass legislation that they're pushing right now, starting yesterday with a press conference, that will not do a damn thing in the way of prevention. Quote, unquote, if it saves one life, we just gotta try, Obama says. Really? So why are we not removing illegal alien gang members from our communities? Save a life. After all, they are in the country illegally. While we hear Mayor Cuomo spouting rhetoric like, in the madness, make New York safer, save lives. And we see the mayor of Chicago following the lead. We see and hear nothing about the outrageous crime in Chicago, or New York for that matter, and the armed, illegal, alien gang member. That member that you know, the citizens that they, Washington wants to protect so bad, we get to live with. Where is that discussion? There is report and statistic after report and statistic. I just read you two ICE releases with numerous weapons charges of illegal aliens, and we hear nothing. We hear nothing about this. It is time, no matter what your race, color, creed is, that we address the violence in our communities and in the country by illegal alien gang members. Not turn a blind eye to it and create yet another sanctuary city. It's unbelievable. Let's see here. I'm just going to kind of run over this one real quick here. If you hadn't heard about this, it's Dream Activist Family Arrested After Home Raid by ICE. This is by TPM. It's dated January 11th via Associated Press. What it is the Dream Activist family members were arrested. Her name is this Erica. I'm just going to call her Erica after this. Andiola is a young undocumented immigrant and activist. She may be free from the threats of raids and deportation, but the family is another story. This last Thursday, at a home in Arizona, was raided by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents who knocked on her door, then arrested her mother, Maria, after she opened the door to check on her visitors. When an older brother refused to provide documentation of his own legal status, he was brought in as well. After reaching out, Erica, to her friends in the activist community to help protest her family's treatment, and Erica recorded a heartbreaking video on YouTube recounting the raid, of course, what happens? They were released. But before this, Erica told reporters that ICE informed her that Ariola had a previous order for removal stemming from a 1998. Last month, her mother was stopped for speeding and fingerprinted by Arizona police when she couldn't produce identification, allowing police, now empowered by state law, to identify illegal immigrants. They referred her to ICE. Quote, unquote, although one individual had been previously removed from the country, an initial review of these cases revealed that certain factors outlined in ICE's prosecutorial discretion policy appear to be present and merit an exercise of discretion, end quote, said ICE spokesperson Barbara Gonzalez. A further review of the cases is currently ongoing. ICE exercises prosecutorial discretion on a case-by-case basis, considering the totality of the circumstances in an individual case, end quote. Here's the update. Well, first, isn't that nice? Complete and utter BS, but isn't that nice? But here's the update, even more mind-numbing. Dated January 16th by the Associated Press out of Phoenix, an immigration activist who's one of the leaders of the DREAM Act movement is joining the staff of, wait for it, Arizona Congresswoman Kirsten Sinema as a district outreach director. Do you believe this? Erica is a founder of the Arizona DREAM Act Coalition. She is also an illegal immigrant from Mexico who has been granted deferred action. Erica was in the news last week when her mother and brother were arrested by federal immigration officers at the family's home in Mesa. They were later released. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials insist the two were not targeted because of Erica's activism. Erica said ICE agents told her there was a long-pending deportation order for her mother, and her brother was detained for refusing to answer agents' questions. You know, this is just simply unbelievable. What a mockery of our legal system and the rule of law. Really. One cannot provide he's in legally in the country, that being the brother. One had a long-standing deportation order and refused to obey the mother. And one, the daughter, gets to stay, although she's an illegal alien because Obama has granted a stay via executive order. And she works, much like a community organizer, to further advocate the lawlessness. And now is employed by an Arizona congresswoman. It's enough to give you an ice cream headache. If it was not for Obama, King Obama's decree, I'm sure that someone in Arizona would have already demanded the arrest and criminal charges for this congresswoman. Just who is she representing anyways? What a slap in the face to every law-abiding American and legal resident, isn't it? What is allowed to be taking place here? Because no one in Washington is speaking up is treasonous. It's ridiculous. We are going to take our second and last break of this evening. When we come back, we will get to as much news as we can. And please stay tuned. We're just going to take a quick one here. Let's find a short song. We'll play this one. We'll be right back.
We're the Minutemen. We're gonna stand for our country. We'll fight till the end. We're the Minutemen. We're gonna stand for our country. We'll fight till the end. We're the just women and men, but our borders will defend.
Talk radio the way the founding fathers would have done it.
Welcome back to the Ruthie Report. Thank you for tuning in. If you are just tuning in now, we had some major problems this evening with Blog Talk Radio. It seems like it was across the board, not just this show. We started with our guest, Susan Tully, and again, I am very grateful to have had her on the show. She is welcomed anytime she would like to be on the Ruthie Report. Interesting information. So if you did miss that, please do listen to the show archived. So what we have done since then is we've done criminally and or insane, and we are going backwards. So now we are going to do lead stories. We will get to as much of it as we can. I'm a little off tonight just because everything seems to be just off and wrong, but let's get right to this. This is from Numbers USA. It is www.numbersusa.com. Please do go to that. They say, make no amnesty the first message your representative hears this Congress. Please go to Numbers USA and send a message to your U.S. representative and Obama that you strongly oppose amnesty for illegal aliens and any attempt to raise overall immigration numbers. With various amnesty proposals currently being floated by prominent Democrats and Republicans from both chambers and the White House, it is absolutely critical that the drumbeat for no amnesty begins to echo through the halls of Congress. And what's the conflict here? It says, on one hand, supporters of the DREAM Act amnesty feel emboldened now by the election and are now demanding grand promises about not settling for anything other than a massive, all-out, all-encompassing amnesty. On the other hand, several Republicans who came out in the days following the election expressing support for some sort of amnesty are now qualifying their statements indicating support for a smaller scale amnesties that do not include or do not grant citizenship. You have probably seen articles this week mentioning Senator Rubio from Florida's immigration proposal. Stop. I do have more on that in just a little while. Commenting on Rubio's plan. In the middle of all this, members from both parties have come out saying that they doubt that anything will get done for many months because it is just too difficult for members to reach any sort of an agreement on the details of the amnesty. All which is good news. So again, please go to numbersusa.com. What they have is an action, what they call it, action board. What they have is this action board, and they will send you ideas, calls, faxes that you can participate in. They will show up in your action board. You can go and visit there, send them at any time. Please do get involved. We're going to have to gear up. We're going to have to gear up, people, because it's going to be a tough. This one's going to be tough. Let's see here. Oh, this is, I don't know how many of you have heard this. This was posted at mysanantonio.com. And let's see, where's the date here? I don't see the date. Here, November 27th. Okay, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is holding a young immigrant from Asia who officials say is infected with a rare drug-resistant strain of tuberculosis. The man was detained by Border Patrol trying to sneak into South Texas on November 27th. Several days later, while undergoing a medical screening at the Port Isabel Service Detention Center, he was diagnosed with extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis, the least treatable form of the disease. Officials declined to identify the infected man other than to say he is young and from an Asian country. It's only the third time since 2008 the strain has been detected in Texas. It's a very rare situation, and XDR is considered to be a very dangerous disease, said Carrie Williams, a spokesperson for the department. But it's not easily transmitted, and we have no reason to believe that the community's exposure has occurred. The individual remains in medical isolation in ICE custody, where he is receiving the appropriate treatment from ICE medical staff in consultation with tuberculosis experts. And what is that costing? You know, think this is what I really thought of first, though. So say if he would have successfully, illegally entered, where would he be now? Who would possibly be infected here? And seeing that he entered through the southern border in Texas, how many individuals in Mexico have come into contact with this person? I don't care what they say, easily transmitted or not. So if an epidemic had broke out, would news reports include that it was by an illegal alien who entered via Mexico from Asia? Do you think? So many reasons to secure the border. And yet, what do we hear? Nothing. All right, let's see here. I want to make sure I get to everything here. We're going to have to do it. If you haven't heard about this one, look up Senator Robert Menendez, who has a, I want to put it the way they put it, an illegal immigrant registered sex offender that ICE was supposed to pick up. And they didn't because it was right before the election. Of course, Homeland Security says that that's categorically false. But unfortunately for Homeland Security, Charles Grassley of Iowa and six other Republicans asked for the Obama administration for details. And according to the documents, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents in Newark had arranged to arrest Sanchez. His name is, where is his name again here? Make sure I get it correct. Luis Abren Sanchez Valletta. Zavalletta. Whatever. According to the documents, Immigration and Customs agents in Newark had arranged to arrest Sanchez at a local prosecutor's office on October 25th. That was no fewer than 2 weeks before the election. But noting that Sanchez was a volunteer in Menendez's Senate office, ICE officials in New Jersey advised that the arrest had the possibility of garnering significant congressional and media interest and were advised to postpone the arrest until officials in Washington gave approval. You know, it's gotten to the point where you can't trust our own government. It's been that way for a while, but it's just getting more blatant when it's in print. All right, let's see here. We have about 8 minutes. There is a story, it's an article, it's called Over the Line, Fighting Corruption on the Border. It is by CBS News, is VIA reported, and it's by Sherry Atkinson at the cover story. And this is really something that you should look up and read. It's about a owner in southern Arizona. His name is John Ladd, and his farm, and what they are being forced to go through. This is, you know, I think what I'm going to do is save this article for next week, because it is just alarming what is happening on his ranch. It's alarming. They actually, they'll just drive over. They got ramps going over his property. It is a disgrace. It is appalling that we are allowing our fellow citizens, our fellow Americans, to have to live like this. It is appalling that the politicians and this administration and the president do nothing to correct this. It is terrible. It says here, how many do they think, when asked how many illegal immigrants he estimates has crossed his property, he would say about 500,000. And that's the ones that were caught. It's a very good story. The title again is Over the Line, Fighting Corruption on the Border. But seeing we are limited for time here, we have just about 6 minutes. I want to get to Marco Rubio. This is from the Wall Street Journal, and it's called Riding to the Immigration Rescue. That is the Wall Street Journal's title, not mine. This is dated January 14th. There's a whole bunch of all kinds of, you know, this is a very long written article and it's very flowerful, but I'm just going to cut to the chase here, parts I would like to share with you. It says, whether Mr. Rubio is courageous or foolhardy, the outcome on Capitol Hill and the impact on his career will tell the story. Immigration has long been a profitable wedge issue for Democrats and Republicans. On Wednesday, at the Biltmore Hotel near his home here, Mr. Rubio spelled out a reform plan that charges right up the middle. Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read bits and pieces to you. It says that he says that the U.S. can either change the ratio of preferences for family-based migration or raise the hard cap on people who bring investment or skills into the country. He prefers the latter. He says he looks to increase the number of visas for permanent or seasonal farm workers. He supports E-Verify. He says, as for the border, quote unquote, we know what we need to do to gain more operational control, which he says is invest in people and infrastructure. Unlike Republicans, Mr. Rubio doesn't say that improved enforcement is a precondition for immigration reform. Such reform would, by his argument, ensure that fewer people will need or want to risk border crossing. Really? Politically hardest is the question of what of the up to 12 million illegals currently here. Mr. Rubio's proposal allows for adults who overstay their visas or sneaked into the country to come into the open. He says, this is how I envision it. They would have to come forward. They would have to undergo a background check. Anyone who has committed a serious crime would be deported. They would be fingerprinted, he continues. They would have to pay a fine, pay back taxes, maybe even do community service. They would have to prove that they've been here for an extended period of time. They understand some English and are assimilated. Most of them would get legal status and be allowed to stay in the country. He said they would get a green card first. The waiting time for the green card would have to be long enough to ensure that it's not easily to do it this way than it would be the legal way, he said. It's a staged process that will not please the blanket amnesty crowd nor the Minutemen. Rubio repeatedly says his plan is not a blanket amnesty or a special pathway to citizenship. The illegals wouldn't jump any lines. They'd get behind everybody who came here before them. No one would be asked to leave the country to qualify, but the requirements he sets out merely to get a working permit are significant. You know, and notice, please do listen when you hear him talk. He says that they wouldn't jump in lines. They'd get behind everybody who came before them. So, golly gee, the ones that are trying to come here legally now, I'm assuming they're going to get to come, but the illegals aren't. Are they already going to be in front of them? Because they're not already here. He says people who came here illegally with their parents should be accommodated. That's the Dreamers. In the terms of legislative strategy, Mr. Rubio says he wants to see a comprehensive package of bills, maybe four or five as opposed to one. Well, I have about 1 minute here, so I'm just going to lay it real quick for you. Most importantly, it's not going to work. It will never work. The pro-illegals are already demanding amnesty and calling him a sheep in wolf's clothing. They will never support this. We have Obama, who the illegals are saying, hey, we voted for you, now give us amnesty. He'd never sign it into law. Of course, those of us demanding our laws be enforced can already see that it's just more of the empty lies and promises that we were told in 1986. Now, I have 1 minute. I would like to speak to Mr. Rubio about this border security. You know, if he's really serious about it, maybe he could stop the implementation of the kiosks at the National Big Bend National Park, scheduled to open January 28th with law enforcement 2 hours away. We're running out of time here. We had problems this evening. I do apologize. I thank Susan Tully very much for being our guest. We'll save some of these stories and get to them next week. Next week, our guest is Sheriff Arvin West from Hudspeth County. We are going to talk about Texas and the current gun grab. Thank you for tuning in. See you next week.